He is directly and indirectly conscious of all manifestations, and he is independent because there is no other cause beyond him. It is he only who first imparted the Vedic knowledge under the heart of Brahmaji, the original living being. By him, even the great sages and demigods are placed into illusion as one is bewildered by the illusory representations of water seen in fire or land seen on water. Only because of him do the material universes, temporarily manifested by the reactions of the three modes of nature, appear factual, although they are unreal. I therefore meditate upon him, not Sri Krishna, who is eternally existent in the transcendental abode, which is forever free from the illusory representations of the material world. I meditate upon him, for he is the absolute truth. Om jnanati nirandhasya jnanam jana shalakaya chakshurin nilitam yena tasmai shri gurave namaha nama shrishtam anapesha tiputra matra sarupam rupam tasyaga jamulapurin natarin kosha teen radha akundam dirigura mahorani kamata vasham prapto yasya pratita kripaya shri gurave tamatosya Vandeham Shri Guru Vashiyatav Padakamalam Shri Guru Navaishnavam Shri Rupam Sarvajatam Sarvajatam Tam Sajivam Sarvetam Sarvadhutam Bhavijana Saritam Krishna Titanya Devam Shri Radha Krishna Padam Sarvajatam Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Krishna. Bit by bit. Yeah, that the Supreme Lord is all perfect is confirmed in all Shruti mantras. It is said in the Shruti mantras that the all perfect Lord threw a glance over matter and thus created all living beings. The living beings are parts and parcels of the Lord, and he impregnates the vast material creation with seeds of spiritual sparks, and thus the creative energies are set in motion to enact so many wonderful creations. An atheist may argue that God is no more expert than a watchmaker, but of course God is greater because he can create machines in duplicate male and female forms. The male and female forms of different types of machineries go on producing innumerable similar machines without God's further attention. If a man could manufacture such a set of machines that could produce other machines without his attention, then he could approach the intelligence of God. But that is not possible, for each machine has to be handled individually. Therefore, no one can create as well as God. Another name for God is Asamardha, which means that no one is equal to or greater than him. Param Satyam, or the Supreme Truth, is he who has no equal or superior. This is confirmed in the Shruti mantras. It is said that before the creation of the material universe there existed the Lord only, who is the master of everyone. That Lord instructing Brahma in Vedic knowledge, that Lord has to be obeyed in all respects. Anyone who wants to get rid of the material entanglement must surrender unto him. This is also confirmed in Bhagavad Gita. Yeah, as Srila Prabhupada, most perceptively notes in his preface to this, is it preface or introduction to Srimad Bhagavatam? Yeah, it's the introduction. The conception of God and the conception of absolute truth are not on the same level. This is a profound statement. It goes on to explain. The Srimad Bhagavatam hits on the target of the absolute truth. So the Bhagavatam is concerned with the subject matter of the absolute truth. That is, an English, this absolute truth is the English rendition of the Sanskrit term Brahma, which is used in this verse in another meaning
to that of the Absolute Truth. Brahma means the Absolute Truth, but in this verse it's used to mean the Vedic knowledge, which is not different from the Absolute Truth, because nothing's wholly different from him, but from one perspective it's different, because that is the Vedas. So the Srimad Bhagavatam is an elucidation of Brahma. This is the topic. Brahma is the proper subject of inquiry. And this Srimad Bhagavatam starts with Janmadya Sayataha, which is the second sutra, the second aphorism of the Vedanta Sutras. The first being Atato Brahma Jignasa. Now Brahma should be inquired about. Now, what is the meaning of now? Generally, that is taken to mean that when one has gone through all the Vedic processes and one is fed up with this gata gatam kama kama labhante, this going up and down, going up to the heavenly planets, going down again, doing some more sacrifices, going up again, coming down again, doing some more sacrifices, maybe blowing it like King Riga and having to go down to hell sometimes also. When one is fed up with that, with all this flowery words of the Vedas, which recommend elevation to the heavenly worlds, then one should inquire into the nature of ultimate reality. So that is the first aphorism of Vedanta Sutra. And the second one is Janmadya Sayataha. That absolute truth is the source of everything, that by which everything is maintained, and that into which everything enters. This first two sutras of Vedanta Sutra are a summary of the Taittiriya Upanishad statement, Yato vaimani bhutani jayante, yena jatani jivanti, yat prayatyabhi sangvishanti, tadbrameti, tadvijigyasva tadbrameti, which says that the absolute truth is that from which everything emanates, in which everything exists, into which it again enters. That is the proper subject of inquiry. That is Brahma. So, Vedanta Sutra summarizes that, and then all the different Vedanta philosophers come and explain what that means. Basically, there are two branches of Vedanta philosophers, impersonalists and Vaishnavas. So the impersonalists, they explain this Brahma to be impersonal. And the Vaishnavas explain this Brahma to be Vishnu. Or, here in Srimad Bhagavatam, Gaudiya Vaishnava is explained specifically as Krishna. So the Srimad Bhagavatam hits on the target of the absolute truth. It starts off with a philosophical statement, but comes to the point immediately in the very first verse of establishing that absolute truth is Vasudeva, Krishna. The invocation is there, Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudeva. That comes before Janmadya Sayataha in Srimad Bhagavatam. But that in and of itself would not be enough to convince the impersonalists, because they also say that. They also worship Vishnu, philosophize Vishnu, as Srila Prabhupada refers. But Janmadya Sayata, and then all the other attributes of the Supreme Truth are given. Abhigya, Swarat, Tene Brahma Hridaya Adi Kaviye. He imparted the Vedic knowledge into the heart of Brahma. This is the... He is the Satyam Param. This is another way of the supreme truth. It means the supreme truth. So that supreme truth is the subject of Srimad Bhagavatam. So that is its establishing after it's as the essence, as the summum bonum of all Vedic knowledge. It comes to this point, to Vasudeva, to the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Krishna. But coming to the point of Krishna, he is not simply a philosophical principle to be discussed, but he is the Supreme Person. When we say the Supreme Person, that means the Supreme Master, the Supreme Friend, the Supreme Son, the Supreme Lover, the Supreme Child, the Supreme Rascal, the Supreme Lusty, the Supreme Everything. Yes, he's the Supreme Lusty. I heard Prabhupada say it. Right? You've heard that.
I've heard it.
Yeah. Supreme Lusty.
He said, even if he's lusty, he's unlimitedly lusty.
Yeah. So, he has all personal attributes. He likes food. He's, by material standards, you could not even call him a glutton, because a glutton cannot even imagine to eat as much as Krishna eats. He's a big eater. He eats all the universe. So he is the Supreme Person. The first verse of Srimad Bhagavatam establishes that. The first three verses of Bhagavatam introduce the Bhagavatam. Here the first verse sets the philosophical tone that this is an elaboration on the Supreme Absolute Truth. But that Supreme Absolute Truth is a person. So it's not some principle simply to be discussed. Certainly to be discussed, but not only in philosophical terms. This is where the Bhagavatam, it appears to be very different in character to Vedanta Sutra, which is purely philosophical. Even though it's a commentary on Vedanta Sutra by the author of the Vedanta Sutra himself, that might seem strange that the author writes a commentary on his own writings. Well, there's no harm in that, because the Vedanta Sutra itself is everything expressed in terse form, and the commentary is that explained in more elaborate form. So the terse form is useful for remembering things, getting everything right in a concise and complete manner. And then that is explained in more detail. One can remember the sutra, and then in the sutra is, sutra means the aphorism, just like Janmadhyasya Yataha, that is a sutra. Atato Brahma Jinyas, that is a sutra. So these are all sutras from Vedanta Sutra. And in one sutra, one aphorism, one principle is established. So that has its purpose. And all different philosophies, Vedic philosophies, they're summarized in sutras. Thus we have Yoga Sutras of Patanjali. So, and then they're explained further. So Vyasadeva explains, and then all different commentators further explain Bhagavatam, because unlimited subject matter. And after all, tadvijigyasva, this is the proper subject of inquiry. So Bhagavatam, the first verse establishes, this is the subject of Srimad Bhagavatam. The second verse establishes the superiority of the Srimad Bhagavatam over all other literature, all other deliberations of philosophy, all other, whatever there may be in all existence, the Srimad Bhagavatam is superior to all of that, because it, the reason for that is, should be clear from the first verse, because the Srimad Bhagavatam hits directly, as Srila Prabhupada writes, hits on the target of the absolute truth. So everything else is inconsequential in relation to that, and if we try to understand or discuss anything without discussion of that, then it's wrong, off the point, off target. So everything should be targeted on the absolute truth, and Srimad Bhagavatam directly does that. Now we could just discuss the pastimes of Krishna without discussing all this philosophy, but without having the philosophical understanding of who is Krishna as the absolute truth, without clearly understanding Krishna as the absolute truth, then the tendency will be in discussing Krishna to presume Krishna to be another relative truth. Because our consciousness, if it's not fixed in the absolute truth, necessarily floats in the realm of the relative truth. And then when we come to discuss Krishna, the supreme lusty, because we only have experience of lust on the relative platform. That means in relation to everything that is temporary in this world, therefore we will take Krishna's pastimes to also be some manifestation of the relativity of this world. In other words, we'll take Krishna to be like us, mundane, impelled by mundane desire. So, Srimad Bhagavatam, the ultimate topic, that and the ultimate purpose is described in the third verse, which the second verse establishes the superiority of Srimad Bhagavatam and rejects all else. Anything, as is described later, that whatever is perceived without a relation to Krishna is simply an illusion. Ritaritam yat priti eta, yat priti eta chavane. What's the next line? Tad? No, I forgot it. You forgot it too.
Yeah.
So, what Krishna says, whatever is perceived of without a relation to me, you should know to be simply a manifestation of my illusory energy. So, even discussion of Krishna, if it's not clearly on the basis of understanding him as the supreme personality of Godhead, that will tend to be mundane discussion. So the third verse of Bhagavatam appears to be completely different. It's like the whole mood changes. The first verse is very heavy, very profound philosophical establishment of Krishna as the supreme personality of Godhead. The second verse sounds like triumphalistic. This is it. Chuck everything else out. The first verse is very grave. The second verse is very heavy. The third verse is, hey, this is a lot of nectar over here. Come on, folks. Let's get into it. Let's enjoy the nectar. The Srimad Bhagavatam is full of nectar. So what kind of book is the Bhagavatam? Is it heavy philosophy, or is it just some kind of sectarian dogmatism? Or is it all nectar and all bliss? Well, all three answers are true. Not sectarian dogmatism. That's a misunderstanding. But it is exclusive. Srimad Bhagavatam is exclusive. That if you take this, and there's no need for anything else. Why is that? Well, how this is to be understood, that we can understand by what is called dipe dehali nyai. That means this: if you on a porch at the entrance to a house, if you put a lamp, this is in the days before all neon lamps, you put a little oil wick lamp. So that gives light outside and inside, both sides. So this, why Srimad Bhagavatam should be accepted and all else rejected, looking back to the first verse, which is also Singha Avalokanyai, looking back, that looking back to the first verse, there, this is a deliberation on the absolute truth. Therefore, what need is there for anything else? And the third verse, this is all nectar. This is the nectar for which every living being desires happiness. This is true bliss. This is what all the Vedas, the Vedas are like a desire tree, and the ripened fruit of that, which is simply pure blissful nectar, that is here. So either way we should take it. But as philosophic establishment of the absolute truth and the highest bliss. But the two are not separate. We shouldn't think that the two are separate. That the philosophical delineation of Krishna as the Supreme Personality of Godhead is something different from his blissful pastimes. So that is established in Srimad Bhagavatam, first of all. This is the absolute truth. But the absolute truth happens to be a playful cowherd boy. Mm. So if you really want to know the absolute truth, then take off your shoes, because he doesn't wear any. And run with him in Vrindavan. But before doing that, one will have to be qualified. There's some qualification. The qualification is that one has to be free from all material desire and simply desire to serve Krishna for his pleasure only. So all these subjects, why one should be completely free of material desire. That's generally stated in the Vedas, that we should be free of material desire because it causes suffering, and which is a fact. But when one comes to the fully devotional platform, one understands that material desire blocks my pure desire to serve Krishna. So material desires are an impediment in serving Krishna. A pure devotee doesn't even think how to get free from suffering. For a pure devotee, there's no perception of suffering. But a pure devotee perceives suffering as not having the opportunity to serve Krishna. Or not, not being in Krishna consciousness. And other things. Birth, death, old age and disease, adhyatmik, adhibhautik, adhidaivik, klesh, distress generated by our own mind and body, distress from material nature ordained by the demigods, distress from other living beings, they are symptomatic of the distress of being separated from Krishna. So all this will be explained elaborately in Srimad Bhagavatam, of which these first three verses, they set the tone for what is this great treatise of spiritual knowledge. And we can distribute this. I've said many times that in my lectures, that this first verse of Bhagavatam gives more knowledge of the nature of God. Just one verse. What to speak of the purport. Gives more knowledge of the actual nature of God than all the Abrahamic scriptures, which means the Bible, the Quran. Well, that's it. And actually, even the Upanishads, most of the Upanishads, they're not very clear. They get, well, a little bits here, I mean, important what they state, but there are little bits here and there, whereas it's all gathered up in this first verse of Bhagavatam. So we can distribute. It's the most amazing thing that here we are in San Diego, Pacific Beach, in the most unlikely place, discussing that. That I recorded that in Bhaktisiddhanta Vaibhav, that this Ramendra, and I can't remember his second name, his Brahmin name, he came to the Goryamart at Ultadingi Junction Road. And he was amazed to see in a materialistic city like Calcutta that Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur is sitting and discoursing on the Upanishads. He thought, how is that going on here? People come to this city for material progress, not for spiritual progress. The whole city was founded for the sake of material development, economic development. So he was very surprised to see that in the city, because generally that would be in the country. The brahmanas at that time, like himself, was living in the country. Now all the brahmanas are in the city, because that's where all the money is. So they would be in the country, or they would be in holy places, like Navadvip. So he was surprised to see in Calcutta. So I mean, it may be very surprising that in this place, which is far more materialistic than Calcutta, that the absolute truth is being discussed. So what should we say in relation to that? Srila Prabhupada ki jai. Yeah. So please distribute this Bhagavatam. Srila Prabhupada very much wanted that these big books be distributed. So, although people are so far away from Krishna, but in another sense, no one is far away from Krishna. How far are we away from Krishna? Long, long, long way away. But we can be immediately connected by the mercy of the pure devotee. Krishna is there in our heart and can immediately connect us. Missing link. What's the missing link? The missing link is Srila Prabhupada's instructions. We're all missing our link to Krishna. That's stated here in Bhagavatam also. What is that? Krishna Parame Purushe? Huh? Bhaktir Utpadyate Pungsa Shokama Bhayabaha.
Oh, yeah.
Anartha Pashamang Sakshad Bhakti Yoga Madhoksha Chi. Oh, there's another verse. Lokasya Janato Vibhangs Chakra Satmata Sanghita. Yeah. So this, by this linking process of devotional service, we who are suffering in this material world due to so many anarthas, activities which have no meaning, they have no value to us, they can all be completely mitigated by the process of devotional service. But people don't know this, therefore Vyasadeva compiled this literature. And Srila Prabhupada, as the modern Vyasadeva, has put this into English, and people can immediately be connected with Krishna by this. Hare Krishna!
Hare Bhagavan!
So 8:30 is time up, but it's hands up also. So, what should I do?
You
put my hands up and surrender.
That's all right.
Yeah, you're putting one hand up. Actually, we should make it two hands up for asking.
But what if the question's arrogant?
Oh, okay. Well, then we can have a little spirit of surrender. Okay. All right. If Derrida has a question, it's going to be a tough one. It should be a tough one.
Yeah.
So here it says, in the paragraph of the purport that you read, that some people say that God is no more than a watch creator. They may have created this world.
He created,
But he created these male and female forms that can duplicate and keep going.
He can't make baby watches
without any more attention from God. But our philosophy is that he's got full attention. What happened to Maya Dikshana Prakriti?
Yeah, I thought of that also. That Prabhupada writes in the purport that God is more than a watchmaker because he makes forms that they reproduce without any further attention from God. Yeah. So I thought of that also, because there is attention from him. We understand, the Krishna himself says, Maya Dhyakshena Prakriti Suyate Sacharacharam. So I understand that statement to be contextual, like so many of the statements in Srila Prabhupada's books, that he doesn't just like with a watch, you have to make each one individually.
Yeah.
So, probably by machine, something like that nowadays. But he makes the prototype form, Adam and Eve, no, Manu and Shatavipa, and which produce on and on and on. And again, different to a watch, in as much as each form of a human is, by the agency of material nature, is programmed so that each body is a repository of suffering and happiness, exactly according to the karmic reaction of the jiva who is to inhabit that body, which is a bit of an elaboration. And it goes on throughout the whole creation, once the prototype is there. And yes, his superintendence is there. But actually also, that is done through his agents, through the demigods. He's there also, but as upadrashtanumanta, he's upadrashta. He sees, but he's not at some distance. Yeah, not directly involved.
Certainly is unique.
Yeah, I have to take from Badrinarayan.
I would just offer an addition. Prabhupada gives the example of an acorn, or an oak tree, and from a little acorn. So he uses this example again and again. And like you said, it's not that each one. I would just listen to tape where Prabhupada says, just as Maharaj was saying, that Prabhupada says that how Krishna is simply enjoying. The man studied all the deities in India and concluded that Krishna is God because he's just enjoying. So that's one of his features. I also think, as far as contextually, Prabhupada gives the reader some credit for having intelligence to understand the point he's trying to make. And I also think it's a bit of flavor of Prabhupada's wry humor. Okay, fine, you made a wash, but Krishna can make washes that go on forms unlimitedly. So I think we have to take the full path.
I thought it was an interesting...
No, but it is interesting.
I also thought of it as I was reading it, and I was going to speak on it, but then I went off on a different tangent altogether. Different subject.
The Prabhupada does give the reader some intelligence.
Yeah.
Maharaj, I missed the... can you please explain the Deepa Nyaya philosophy, philosophical...
Oh, yeah, that... Deepa de Halina. Deepa means an oil lamp. Have you ever seen one of those? You put a little cotton in oil in a clay, I don't know what to call it, in a tray or something.
Baked.
Like a bowl.
Baked.
Nobody said you have a little cup or a little clay.
Yeah, a little clay dish or something.
Yeah.
And you light that. And you put it on, just like here, if this door is open, you put it on the porch. What's that called?
Threshold.
So at night, that will give light outside for people who are approaching the house. And it will light the room inside also. So both directions. So I said that in relation to the second verse of Bhagavatam, which states that this is the best knowledge.
nothing else is required. So why is it the best knowledge? Go both sides, first verse and third verse. The first verse establishes this is the ultimate philosophical understanding. And the third verse, see, it's on one side of the second verse, the first verse and the third verse. And the third verse, because this is the highest nectar, highest bliss. So it's true, for this is the highest knowledge, the highest subject on both sides. It can be understood from both the preceding verse and the following verse. Got it now? The example is easier to follow if you know what this lamp is, because even if you put it here at night, it wouldn't make much difference because there's all these electric lights.
Yeah.
If there are no electric lights, you can see a little cotton lamp, how much light it can give, especially on the new moon day. Doesn't make any sense. You don't know because you're in a neon light society. But where there's no electric lights, then on the new moon night, it's very dark. Because on the full moon night, if this was printed a little clearer, you could read this in the moonlight. Whereas on the new moon night, that means where the moon is very thin, then you can hardly see, you can't see a hand in front of your face. But if there's a little light put, then so much illumination is there. The power of the light to illuminate is in proportion to the absence of any other light. Not difficult to understand. It's pretty simple principle.
Thank you, Maharaj, for your very nice class. I was wondering, as far as book distribution goes, which is a better book to try to distribute to people, Bhagavad Gita or Srimad?
Which is a better book to distribute, Bhagavad Gita or Srimad Bhagavatam? Give them both best. The more the better. They should go away with... Prabhupada said about the programs, people should come to our programs, they should go away with their hands full with books, their stomach full of prasadam, and their purses empty. Oh, they're all good. They're all good to distribute.
Yes.
All the books are good to distribute. Gita, Bhagavatam, Krishna the Reservoir of Pleasure, they're all good. But Srila Prabhupada did at one point emphasize that he was mostly interested in distribution of big books.
We understand Krishna is in Golok Vrindavan with his parents, Nanda Maharaj and Yashoda Mata. I was wondering, probably the Krishna name was probably given, although it's all attractive and all beautiful, was given by their parents.
The name Krishna, well, if we find in Krishna Leela described in Bhagavatam, that was given by who? Who can say?
Garga Muni.
He gave the name, but of course that's an eternal name. So that's Krishna's pastime. He's given that name.
It was a custom to invite a sage to come and name the child.
Yeah, the name given. The name may be given by different people, just like we said. Generally, the official name would be given by a brahmana who he sees the astrological situation and gives a name that is suitable to the character. Just like Nilamba Chakravarti was an astrologer, and he was the maternal grandfather of the
the second son who survived of Jagannath Mishra, and seeing his qualities, he named him Vishvambhar. He's competent to maintain the whole universe. So Vishvambhara means the maintainer of the universe. But then Sita, the wife of Advaita, she also came and she gave him more of a nickname, Nimai, because he was born under a neem tree. So she thought that would protect him because most of his elder brothers had died. Yeah, I have a question.
I was under the impression that the Bhagavad Gita sort of argued itself to be the supreme book, sort of.
Bhagavad Gita is the supreme book, that's true. Srimad Bhagavatam is also supreme. They're non-different. What is in Bhagavad Gita concisely is in Srimad Bhagavatam, what's the word? Profusely, not profusely.
Elaborate.
Elaborately, comprehensively. As a Sankshipt Vistrit.
How do we dispel the misconception most people have that we can read Srimad Bhagavatam only like toward the end of the life?
We can read Srimad Bhagavatam toward the end of the life. The misconception people have. Well, you tell them in Kali Yuga life is very short, so as soon as you are born it's the end of the life. If we only have 70 years to live, well, for Satya Yoga, that would be it. When you're 1 year old, you're at the end of your life. We're always at the end of our life. But people who think like that, they're not sincere. They're just rascals, actually. And at the end of life, they won't read Srimad Bhagavatam either. Because if you don't have a practice to do so, then how will you get in old age, suddenly you have after all your life being totally materialistic, how in old age are you going to have a taste for reading Srimad Bhagavatam? So, what will you do with such people who say that you should only read Bhagavatam at the end of life?
There are similar misconceptions about Bhagavad Gita also, mostly Indian families. I think if they keep Bhagavad Gita at home...
Yeah, Bhagavad Gita, Mahabharata, they think it's very inauspicious. Then they'll be fighting at home. But they have video games for their kids which are all full of fighting. So it's simply... Yeah, Hinduism is an elaborate arrangement for pretending to be pious while avoiding surrendering to Krishna. So... that's Hinduism. They make up all these things. One should study Gita, Bhagavatam, but they make up some excuse to avoid it. They'll go to the temple and ask Krishna, give me this, give me that, but serious Krishna consciousness, they avoid. Yeah.
Maharaj, it was mentioned that there is a difference between God and the Absolute.
No, it's not mentioned there's a difference between God and the Absolute Truth, but it is mentioned that people tend to think that there's a difference. But as will be explained, if you read the whole of the first paragraph of this introduction, the Absolute Truth is the Supreme Person. I'll finish it. Hare Krishna. Srimad Bhagavatam ki jai. Srila Prabhupada ki jai. Hare Krishna.